Blog Talk Radio.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind, and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slain. Now we locked up again. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your farms. Black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? It never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up, get up, get up, get up, get up, get up,
get up. They done tore down all the PJs in my barrio. Worst case scenario, might work, still a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes, cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodent's still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, racing dough. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland Security, now there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Truth still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in, waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres. Take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early. Is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Being forced to climb instead of how your back heavy, you beat and lost your mind. Especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got pawn shop, gun shop, liquor store signs. SWAT team, crack fiends, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone calls cost a dime. What it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent. Brothers not only dealing with the same drugs, telling you if I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same drug heritage.
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
You know the black freedom movement, constitution, moral conscience. You know we've been trying to redeem the soul of the nation. Even as that nation's been trying to render us soulless. But we are our soulful people, the blues people. We've been keeping alive the same banner of democracy. Thank God for those who came before. We shall never forget them and always move forward with grace and dignity.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America,
America, and to our listeners around the world, to another episode of Dr. Mary Lee Live. 3 years ago, Dr. Mary Lee started this program for a forum for us to discuss the contemporary issues and topics of our day. Tonight's topic is the history of medicine. Dr. Lee's co-host is Dr. James Cannon, president of the Nick Cannon Foundation and father of entertainer Nick Cannon. Dr. Cannon is a spiritual leader and community activator, and he brings his knowledge and wisdom to the show every night. Trace McMillan, the other co-host, is a newly graduated communications major who brings his technical expertise and insight and wisdom of a young black man in America striving to achieve excellence. Dr. Lee's usual panel of doctors includes Dr. Anita Moncrief, a doctor of internal medicine who specializes in pediatrics, Dr. Curtis Longs, a doctor of psychiatry who specializes in dealing with at-risk youth adjudicated in the legal system, and Reverend Dr. Don J. Tynes. Dr. Tynes spends his off time working with youth affected by gang culture. Tonight's special guest is Dr. James Brown. As our other doctors, he is a graduate of Wayne State University, and he recently put on a symposium discussing the history of medicine. Now, to our host, Dr. Mary Lee, she needs no introduction, but she'll get one anyway. And as usual, if you want to speak, please press 1 on your phone. If you are not the dedicated speaker, we only ask that you press mute on your phone so that the speaker can be heard clearly. Thank you very much. Now, over to Dr. Lee.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jared. And we welcome you all. We're so excited about tonight's show. We have a great show lined up, and our speaker is going to bring to us some information that I'm certain many of you don't know. So we're excited about tonight. We thank you for joining us. As stated earlier, please keep your phones on mute. If you're not speaking, we're asking our audience to remember, just tap one on your phone to join the conversation. This is our show together. And we thank you for joining us, and we welcome you. Tonight we're going to start with Dr. Moncrief. We always want Dr. Moncrief to give us a recap of what we've been talking about for the past couple of weeks, and particularly last week. This is a continuation of last week's show. And then Dr. Moncrief, if you'll just share a little bit more about yourself. And we will eventually get down to our special speaker, Dr. James Brown, MD. Dr. Moncrief.
Good evening, Dr. Lee. Good evening, guests. Good evening, audience. It's a pleasure to have the privilege to come and share this information with you tonight. Dr. Brown, I'm looking forward to his presentation on the history of medicine, because its roots really is black history, and people, for some reason, don't know that. We've been on a journey for the past few weeks, and last week we had a guest on, and really we wanted to figure out who was the victim. And many times we wanted to lump everybody into one category, or everybody who's a member of a group into one category. And our guest last week was a police officer who had really been a victim of the system that she had been and wanted to be a part of for many years. And reflecting on that, I'm an internist and pediatrician by training. I'm a physician. And at the end of the day, just like the police have their own code of silence to protect fellow police officers, but they still tend to throw those of us of color under the bus. The medical profession can be just as cutthroat. They tend to protect their own, and sometimes the the patient has to have advocate who's of that profession, who's strong enough to speak out in their behalf. And so understanding the history of medicine probably can help us understand why we actually betray the people who we are supposed to be protecting. So I'm looking forward to Dr. Brown's conversation and the rest of the guests. Thank you.
And thank you. And thank you so much. Dr. Longs is with us tonight. And soon, Dr. joining us. We also had Dr. Donovan Roy with us, and who enlightened us quite a bit on diversity, I believe it was. So, Dr. Longs, would you say hello and give a little bit about yourself and recap a bit for us on Dr. Roy.
Good evening. Again, thank you, Dr. Mary Lee. And I want to say hello to all of the co-hosts, and a special hello to Dr. James Brown, who I know very well, and I know is going to deliver a lot of knowledge. Yeah, this has been a very enlightening past 3 months, beginning with saving our sons and daughters or saving our babies, then leading up to things that we seem not to be able to let go. And then I had a special guest with Officer Parker deliver her message. But last week was interesting because most of the panel, we also participated in the selection of some new medical students to a specific program associated with Wayne State's School of Medicine, again, with the hopes of increasing our numbers not in mainstream medicine, but also in the various specialties. It's very important that we maintain that focus intact. And I'm so happy and proud that Dr. Donovan Roy is leading the charge for all of us. So it's been, like I said earlier, it's been a very interesting past 3 months, a lot of great conversation. And I look forward to Dr. James Brown and his delivery as a fellow graduate of Wayne State School of Medicine. Thank you.
And thank you. Thank you so much. And the highlight or the emphasis last week on diversity, you know, how we talked about the importance of Black and the lack of Black representation in medicine. And with this program, at Wayne State University, I would like, just for the benefit, a few of the people who weren't on last week or didn't quite understand, the same as was in medicine, most all professional, the careers, such even as lawyers, their projects, their programs that allow for tuition and expenses to be covered, various types of mentoring to go on. So these are, they're competitive projects or programs for the entrance of new students, for these careers. And these programs have been set up, for minorities. But the problem is everyone is a minority now, pretty much, almost. And, it was set up for Blacks, but then somewhere along the way, everybody else got included, Blacks are being pushed out. And of projects and programs that were designed for us as a people, and I think back, my son's a lawyer. I think back, Notre Dame had a project such as what we call the BOT program at the for doctors. And his project program was for lawyers. And so given single mom's income, which, you know, which was mine not very much at all, and he being black and male, we were, and he was, I mean, extremely confident that he would win a seat, a spot in this program, you know, at Notre Dame, you know, law school, that was in the 90s, late 90s. And so, you know, we're extremely confident about it. As I know, you know, black medical prospective students, you know, from med school would be as well. Well, there are only so many spots, and if I recall correctly, my son was the only black male, period. Okay, so we were like really extra confident that there would be no way he would not get in. And he was so looking forward to it. And so what happens, they start going through the process that you guys were going through last week in selecting the students. And my son got selected, all got deselected, or they selected all around him the person, an Asian female. I think there may have been one black female, but no black males. And he certainly did not get in. So, you know, we like to bring this information out there because what's going on in the systemic racism system in this U.S. is very, very real. It's very, very real back then. You know, there's no way my son should not have been there given my, what was I doing at the time? I may have been a paralegal or a secretary, but, you know, still single parent, considered low income. I mean, you know, I wasn't earning arm and a leg to pay for that type of, you know, his education. And so, Dr. Moncrief, if you would just elaborate just a tiny bit more about, you know, that little, okay, thank you.
Yes, and that's part of that unfairness, that institutional racism that exists, that for some reason we don't want to teach the critical race theory in our school to help people understand the laws and the intersection of that, the impact it has had on us. Last week, we were late coming on to your show because we were dealing with something like that down at Wayne State University School of Medicine, our post-baccalaureate program. The new vice dean of diversity, Dr. Roy, who chairs the post-bac committee, was our guest speaker. And what he was sharing with us was the process of why we need programs like the post-baccalaureate program. That program was started in 1969 at Wayne State University School of Medicine because the school would not accept African Americans. People tend to think that people of color are not qualified and therefore they're not accepted into the health professional school. But in actuality, blacks were qualified but were not admitted historically. Wayne State School of Medicine post-bac program was the first program of its kind in the country that focuses on accepting African Americans in order to address the disparities in admissions. Fast forward last Wednesday, okay, this program has been under attack for many, many, many years. It was under attack in 1978 by the Bakke decision, which said that professional schools could not give blacks or any other people of color a preference in the admissions process. Just when blacks were starting to make a leadway into getting admitted into the traditionally white medical schools, the Bakke decision came out to help block that. Fast forward to 2006, right here in the state of Michigan, when Proposal 2 passed. Again, it said professional schools, medical schools, law schools, schools of that caliber cannot give a preference or hold spaces for people of color. You can hold spaces for what we call legacy students, i.e., if your father went to the University of Michigan, then you get a preference to go to the University of Michigan. But because blacks were traditionally denied admission to those schools, we don't have a legacy, so that we can't get that preference. But that's not against the law. Programs, fast forward to, again, last week. Programs such as the post-baccalaureate program, which gives first-generation students from disadvantaged backgrounds, no longer black. Blacks, you can't be black, you can't be Hispanic, you can't be Native American, okay? You have to be from a disadvantaged background now. Everybody and their mama claim to be disadvantaged. Blacks are being pushed out of the post-bac program. When you push blacks out of programs such as the post-bac program, the only door to admission to medical school is the regular admissions. Guess what? Wayne State is the largest medical school in this country, single-campus medical school in this country. It accepts 300 students a year. Wayne State, out of its 300 students that it accepts a year in the city of Detroit, only accepted 12 African Americans. 12 African Americans. Without the post-bac program, they would not have had that 12. That's what we were talking about last week. That's the unfairity that we're speaking about today. That's what Dr. Roy's mission is to address. Okay, how do you increase diversity when you have a school that accepts 300 students in a city that's 85% African American, and out of 300, you can only find 12 African Americans? That's the summary of last week and what we should be addressing this week and from now on, as far as I'm concerned. How do you get rid of that disparity? Dr. Lee talked about what happened to her son-in-law a couple of decades ago. The same thing that happened in medicine a couple of decades ago. When I went to medical school, Wayne State accepted 256 students. Only 14 of us were black. Now here we are. 40 years later, in 300, and only 12 are black. Do you know what backwards is? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. The history of medicine. The history of medicine. Our special speaker tonight is James Brown, M.D. He's a graduate of Wayne State University Medical School. Dr. Brown has practiced family medicine for 28 years. Dr. Brown is board certified in family medicine and currently is seeing geriatric patients. Dr. Brown was born and raised in Detroit. He graduated with a Bachelor's of Science in Biology from Wayne State University. Many mentors have helped Dr. Brown accomplished the goal of being a community-based African-American physician. Some of these mentors include the late James J. PhD, a world-renowned microbiologist, current professor Joseph Dunbar, PhD, an internationally recognized physiologist at the Wayne State University School of Medicine. They were co-directors of the MARC, M-A-R-C, and M-B-R-S programs at Wayne State Undergraduate College. The late Dr. Mary Ann Marazzi, Ph.D., Department of Pharmacology. The late Ms. Marjorie Edwards of the postdoc program at Wayne State University, and the late Jane Thomas, Ph.D., State University Student Affairs Program, and countless friends and colleagues. Dr. Brown has received many awards, including the State of Michigan Tribute and Primary Medicine Award, the four-time recipient of the State of Michigan Governor's Award for Excellence in Primary Care, the Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Community Service Award, the Great Doctor Award presented by Health Plus of Michigan for outstanding patient outcomes in the treatment of chronic disease and preventive medical care. Tonight, the topic of Dr. Brown's presentation is the history of medicine. Dr. James Brown, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Dr. Lee, for that wonderful introduction. And thank you, Dr. Moncrief, for your great wisdom and your great leadership these years that you've been associated with Wayne State. And thank you, Dr. Curtis Longs, for your expertise helping our youth and for your friendship. And also, I thank Dr. Donald Tynes and Dr. Donovan Roy. When I first met Dr. Roy, I said, where have you been? We've been looking for someone like you for the last 20, 30 years at Wayne State. The subject of my talk is the history of medicine. And many people have been taught in undergraduate as well as at all levels of school that Greece was the center and the start of Western civilization. But what we have not been taught is that Greece, the philosophers, Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, and countless of the others from Greece studied in Kemet, which means the land of the blacks, which is Egypt. Now, the information that I'm sharing with you all, I am not an historian. I'm not an Egyptologist, but the information was gleaned from those that are. And the reading list for this talk is African Origins of the Major Western Religions by Dr. Joseph Ben Jokanen, Before the Mayflower by Lerone Bennett Jr., African Origins of Civilization, Myth or Reality by Sheikh Anta Diop, Free Your Mind, Return to the Source, African Origins by Asa Hilliard, Introduction to African Civilizations by John G. Jackson, Stolen Legacy by George James, World's Great Men of Color, Volumes 1 and 2 by J.A. Rogers, The African Presence in Early Europe, Black Women in Antiquity, and Blacks in Science by Dr. Ivan Van Sertima, The Isis Papers by Francis Cress Welsing, The Destruction of Black Civilization, Great Issues of Race from 4,500 BC to 2000 AD by Chancellor Williams, The Last Pharaohs of Nubia by Bruce Williams, and African Background Outlined by Carter G. Woodson. In the introduction of John G. Jackson's venerable work, Introduction to African Civilization, John Henry Clark wrote, and I quote, "Mr. Jackson's chapter on Egypt and the evolution of civilization calls to mind the fact that the study of Egyptology developed in concurrence with the development of the slave trade and the colonial system. It was during this period that Egypt was literally taken out of Africa academically and made an extension of Europe. In many ways, Egypt is the key to ancient African history. African history is out of kilter until ancient Egypt is looked upon as a distinct African nation. End of quote. Egypt first became an organized nation around 6000 BC. Imhotep is considered to be the world's first physician. He was a distinctly melanin-dominant brother and was a multi-level genius. In addition to being a physician, he was an architect, astronomer, minister of state, poet, philosopher, and diplomat. Imhotep is the author of the oldest medical treatise in existence, the so-called Edwin Smith Papyrus, which is believed to have been written in the 18th dynasty circa 1550 BC. Many regard this papyrus as a copy of the original document that was created as early as the first dynasty of Kemet. Again, Kemet literally means the land of the blacks. And also Kemet, again, is the indigenous name for Egypt. Egyptian civilization crossed the Mediterranean to become the foundation of what is thought of as Greek culture. The teachings of Imhotep were absorbed along with the precepts of other great African teachers. When Greek civilization became predominant in the Mediterranean area, the Greeks wanted the world to think they were the originators of everything. They stopped acknowledging their indebtedness to Imhotep and other great Africans. Imhotep was forgotten for thousands of years. And a Greek, Hippocrates, a figure of some 2,000 years later, became known as the father of medicine. It should be understood that while the achievements of Egypt are best known among African nations, these are not the only achievements that African nations achieved. The nations to the south, called Kush, Nubia, Ethiopia, Mali, Songhai, developed many aspects of civilization independent of Egyptian influence. These nations gave as much to Egypt as Egypt gave to them. Again, in John G. Jackson's chapter on African and Africa and the civilizing of Europe, the empire of the Moors, he challenges two standard myths about Africa. One, that the Africans played no role in introducing civilization to Europe. The other myth is that the Empire of the Moors was a white North African nation. North Africa did not develop out of context with the rest of Africa, and early Europe did not develop out of context with Africa in general. While in the 10th and 11th centuries, all of Europe could show scarcely a single public library, had only two universities that were worthy of that name, they were in Spain, developed by the Moors. At the same time, more than 70 public libraries, of which the one in Cordoba alone contained 600,000 manuscripts. Also, there were 17 famous universities where medicine, astronomy, physics, chemistry, mathematics, geometry, philosophy, and humanities were taught. This was all built on the foundation established by the Moors, who were melanin-dominant people. These were brothers and sisters. The development of African natural medicines is the next topic. What would have happened to the development of African natural medicines were it not interrupted by the African slave trade? colonialism, and apartheid. The history of natural medicines is inherently connected to the origins of humanity. Therefore, it is logical to recognize that the origin of medicines was in the cradle of humanity, or Africa, or Alkebeland, or Alkebeland. Since humans evolved in Africa, it follows naturally that the knowledge and application of the healing arts evolved in Africa, as documented throughout the continent. The evolution of Africa cannot be considered in isolation from the emergence of human civilizations in the Nile Valley of ancient Egypt. That's very important to really, really understand. The next topic is African genetic origins of ancient Egyptians. Contrary to the beliefs of many Europeans, Africa has more than 8,000 years of recorded civilization, especially in the Nile River Valley, whose source begins in the south on the African continent. Civilization refers to organized communities of governance, structures, knowledge systems, cities, agriculture, medicine, etc. Historical attestation of African medical pioneers. Imhotep, 2700 BCE, again, is reported to be the oldest documented physician in history. He was chief of the royal physicians and served King Zoser of the third dynasty of Kemet. It is reported that Imhotep had expert knowledge, herbal formulations used in the treatment of diseases ranging from digestive, reproductive, and central nervous system disorders, including conditions of the eyes, fluids, and blood. The classics also provide a record of the chief world dentist by the name of Hesi-Ra, 2600 BCE. Both Imhotep and Hesi-Ra were professors. The medical profession was never reserved for men alone, but also led by honorable women like Merit-Ptah and Peshet. Merit-Ptah, 2700 BCE, and Peshet, 2600 BCE. These two women were chief royal physicians in the field of gynecology and obstetrics and used herbal formulations in their treatment applications. According to medical papyri, ancient African physicians demonstrated that they had developed scientific methods for the system of medical knowledge. These physicians understood that medicines had general systemic effects on the body. They also recognized the importance of doses, the potency of preparations, and negative consequences and toxic effects of overdoses. This was possible because they had an advanced knowledge of anatomy, as they were experts in mummification. As early as the Old and Middle Kingdoms, Kemet, 5,000 years ago, the origins of what was later denoted as pharmacology emerged. This because ancient physicians realized that administered medicines would have certain effects on the human body. It involved absorption, distribution, bioavailability, dose-response relationships, and general recovery or healing from specific conditions. The ancient African medical philosophy. The ancient African health preservation model was misappropriated and incorrectly attributed to the Greeks, who invaded ancient Kemet in 302 BCE. African physicians were concerned with restoring the health and wellness of the individual. The health preservation theory sought to restore maiat, or homeostasis in the body, life force, mind, and consciousness. This next section is called Not Out of Greece. Leading Greek historians such as Homer, Herodotus, and Diodorus themselves affirmed that Greek physicians, philosophers, and scientists like Thales, Pythagoras, and Hippocrates studied in Kemet. Hippocrates, known in Western medicine as the father of medicine, went to the Kos Medical School in Kemet. Hippocrates is said to be responsible for the creation of the principles of opposites and harmony and theory of the four humors, yellow bile, black bile, phlegm and melancholy. However, according to Diodorus, these principles were brought to Greece by Pythagoras, who in turn learned these medical principles as a student initiate of African master healers in Kemet, which is Egypt. Hippocrates also is reported to have consulted the Kemetic libraries of Imhotep and the professor physicians that taught him the fundamentals of medicine. Diagnosis and prognosis. Ancient Africa had a variety of medical practitioners, ranging from generalists and specialists in medical fields such as internal medicine, gynecology, dentistry, surgery, ophthalmology, and pediatrics. Africans of antiquity treated patients in specialized facilities called per ankh, or houses of life. Ankh, of course, means everlasting life. In Stolen Legacy and Not Out of Greece, George G. James and Dr. Ra Unnefer, respectively, demonstrate that Greek philosophers, mathematicians, and scientists studied in Africa. In conclusion, in Ghana, the concept of Sankofa means to progress into the future. We must look back. This wisdom is today embraced by African people who always remind themselves of the golden ages of the old and new kingdoms of ancient Egypt, which were the most highly developed civilizations of that time. Reclaiming Africa's stolen legacy will assist in dispelling the falsehood that Africa's medical knowledge in antiquity was purely based on superstition. The article titled African Natural Medicine Toward a Health Preservation Theory and the System Model for Clinical Application, African Natural Medicine and Health Preservation Theory by Drs. Shabala, Matsabi, and Galini, published in the Journal of Traditional Chinese Medical Sciences, it is demonstrated that medical knowledge during the three golden ages of ancient Kemet was logical, systematic, and scientific. It was elucidated how Imhotep, his contemporaries, and his later descendants documented their rational application of this knowledge. By reviving such knowledge, Africans and Africans of the diaspora can correct the many false narratives perpetuated by those which have enslaved, slaughtered, conquered, deceived, and continued to deceive, and just control the narratives. If you control, when you're in control, you write your version of history. And that's what we've been living under for the last 400 plus years. We're living someone else's reality. And there have been several documents that have elucidated how to control and enslave people. You know, the Willie Lynch methods of controlling, I'm not reading now, I'm just talking to you all. The Willie Lynch principles of never teach the slaves business, never keep their families together. You give them your God or your version of God, have them worship you, never teach them the science of love, everything. This is how you control people. And if you keep on telling a lie long enough and loud enough, not only will everyone believe that lie, but you will believe it yourself, and that's the situation we have now. You know, it's, when you get to the point where you have to take Africa and Egypt, which is in Africa, if you look at any map, you can see it's right there. And then you make movies with Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton and the guy that played Moses, Carlton Heston. All the pictures, you know, the mind works in pictures. the mind works in pictures. So when you control the pictures in people's minds, not only do you control the narrative of history, you control everything. And that's what's going on now. And so the reason for it, well, you know, that's all I'm going to say about that, you know. But I'd like
you
to...
You can say more. Okay. Just say what you're about to say. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, let me finish the last couple lines here. And
okay.
I'll say a little bit more about that. But don't know how it got off like that. But it
no
was elucidated
problem.
How... Yes, ma'am. It was elucidated how Imhotep, his contemporaries, and his later descendants documented their rational application of this knowledge. By reviving such knowledge, Africans of the diaspora can correct the many false narratives perpetuated by those who have enslaved us and continue to destroy the minds of our children and continue to destroy our race. What I was saying is, in continuation of what I was saying, is there's a concept developed by Reverend Albert Clay, in terms of his two of his works, The Black Messiah and Black Christian Nationalism, in terms of institutional racism. You know, if you notice that society as a whole, the dominant society, feels threatened, everyone who has skin in the game feels threatened, you know, personally. You know, so they'll accept anything. You know, they'll accept someone like Donald Trump over someone who is eminently more has the training and the background of Hillary Clinton, and then they come up with this thing that's a lie. There's no truth. So there's just been 4 years of lies and lies and lies, and it's just you know, if you study history, you know, which, you know, like I said, I'm not a historian. You know, you have Baba Janine Jordan that can tell you all about history. You got those that were trained by Asa Hilliard, Dr. Ben, and Mr. Jackson, in terms of who are carrying that torch and all the sisters that are carrying that torch. So they're the ones that really teach about this. But, you know, I do read, and my impression is that if you look at aspects of civilizations that have fallen, you know, no one thought during that time that the ancient Rome would fall, but it did. This society is showing that same sort of weakening, and this is an opportune time for people of conscience and people of who are educated and know what's going on to stand up and seeing things how things are done. And I applaud Dr. Moncrief, I applaud Dr. Long, I applaud Dr. Donovan Roy, I applaud Dr. Donald J. Times in terms of looking at the civil rights and revisiting the Civil Rights Act of 1968 to refocus the definition on what is a disadvantaged individual. Because there were decades when there were no African Americans in the medical school, and I hear that it's about to change or has changed, and I applaud you all. But that's all I have to say about that, unless I'm asked a question. And again, Dr. Mindy Lee, thank you for having me on tonight.
Absolutely, and thank you so very, very much for your presentation. This is great. We're going to move to Dr. Tynes, who wasn't here from the very, very beginning, but has been listening. And Dr. Tynes, if you want to chime in here,
yeah.
And then we'll go on around.
Thank you, Dr. Marilyn. Yeah, are you able to hear me?
Yes,
hello,
we can hear you fine.
Yeah, so
yes, first,
Dr. Brown, the thing you have to make sure we don't make the mistake, you are a lay historian. You cannot say that you're not a historian, because if you, therefore, you dismiss everything that you just said. What you did is recited history, and the qualification of a historian is one who records and speaks history or recites history. So you are a lay historian in that you did the research without necessarily doing a university, going through the a university or a formal thing given by a particular group of people or institution. And that's what we need to make sure that people understand. A good friend of mine named Bonacci Montgomery spoke at the medical school and made that statement, and it discredited everything that the audience had just listened to, and therefore they asked him no questions because he just said he disqualified himself. Even though he presented history, he said, "I'm not a historian." So you have to understand who's the qualifier of being a historian. That's going to be based on the work that you present. And what's also important is, yes, that we make it simple, simplistic. Was a Greek student who was at the university set up by Pythagoras on the island of Kos, C-O-S, as Dr. Brown said. And he studied and translated the Metonetra, the African language, into Greek. Up until that time, they always had to hire the Greek to come and teach in Europe. This allowed them to start teaching themselves. So his claim to fame to be the father of Western medicine was his translation of the African into the Greek. And what they've done over time is drop the fact of the Western father and just call him father because we're in a Western civilization. The other thing that's so important, as you mentioned, was the female physicians in our history, especially Pichette, the most identifiable physician, chief physician to the pharaohs. Time shows it ran the pharmacies of that day. So the genetics of medicine runs deep in the African melanin and DNA. So we're natural to be physicians and healers. The concept that we teach as African physicians are called Sunu and the Metonetra is that we look at the whole person. That's what European medicine is trying to do now is look at the whole person, and they call it holistic. So nothing is new under the sun, as Solomon said. So we have to relearn ourselves, and that's what Dr. Brown is trying to teach us by relearning ourselves. We also have to understand that as we deal with Maat, the principle of truth, justice, and righteousness, that there's not an English word that can say that because that's how our principles mean. We did not worship animals or different gods. We worshiped concepts or principles. And so that we understood that there was one God that was Amun, that means the one that was hidden in everything in the universe, and that we had the aspects that we prayed with of the moon, like Jehuti, which they call Thoth, in terms of the thinking, the intellectual, that we, you know, like we pray, Jesus, give me strength. So that's almost like saying, Jesus, give me the strength of Solomon. You know, Jesus, give me the dedication and the faith of Ruth. You know, it's that kind of concept. So it's not animal worship. That idea, there was only one God. And Wallace Budge, he's the white guy who taught Europe and knew about it. He said that there was only one God in ancient Kemet, which is actually Kemeti Kemet in the Metonetra language. Ta meaning land, Kemet meaning Kemet meaning the black, but it's Ta Mari Kemet, which is the beloved land because Mari means beloved. So and those people in that language are still in existence, but Egypt was the New York of the old world. So any African who had a skill would find their way to Egypt, and they can make a good living. And so what you have is that you have a dispersal through the multiple invasions, but the worst one being the Arabs. The Maya thesis at that time was a study. The question that you're going to ask Dr. Brown is what happened and why. And what happened and why, and then I'll turn it back over to Dr. Brown, is that the African lineage is matriarchal, matrilineal. That's why we always have a big mama or grandmama as someone outstanding. And what the Arabs figured out and what the white guys have just figured out is that no one could defeat the Egyptians, even though they would get their first cousins from Nubia, from up south, that to come in and they would push out the invaders. But what happened, even with the Hyksos and everyone came in, they attacked the man. And so the concept of our people is a man is a shield so the woman can build. So the man is a shield that so the woman could build. And so what that relates to is that a woman builds a house. A woman builds a house, but a man makes it a home by the love he puts into his wife. If he puts love into his wife, he has a loving home. If he tears down his wife, he tears down his home. So the strength that they've noticed and how you've noticed is that the African women were putting bracelets on their children to remind them of their brothers and sisters that were went through the door of no return or the middle passage. There was no such thing as the transatlantic slave trade. There was no such thing as the transatlantic slave trade. The Atlantic Ocean didn't have a damn thing to do with the slave trade. So what you have is the European and American slave trade. You have the European, Britain, and the Great Britain, and the American slave trade. That's what you have, which is distinct from, John Henry Clark tells us, and Dr. Joseph Ben tells us, from the 500 year earlier enslavement by the Africans, who were enslaved by Africans who were supposed to be Africans, but in reality they were saying they were Africans, but they were Persian and what we call today Arabs. So the Arab slave trade started 500 years before the Spanish, the Portuguese, and Henry the Navigator got involved. So the Arab slave trade was 500 years old before the Europeans got involved. And I'll say that again. The Arabs started enslaving blacks. The Arabs started enslaving Africans 500 years before white people started doing it. And in July 7th of 2022, the Arabs are still practicing slavery. The Arabs never stopped enslaving Africans. The Arabs, Persians never stopped enslaving Africans, and you can check with the Global Slavery Index. The Global Slavery Index, used by the United Nations and others, tracks the enslavement of people around the world, and you will see that the African is still enslaved in what we call Arab countries now, which are really Persian countries, and also in other parts of Asia. In the world that the European is against us, the Asian is against us, the Persian or Arab that we say is against us. So all we have is us. And we must relearn who us is. We must re-wash that out, because 99% of us are going to be house Negroes just by our education and affiliation. 99% of us are going to be house Negroes by education and affiliation. And that's why we can't get along right now. But we have to use history as the medium to be able to heal us, to heal that scar. And our number one scar is self-esteem. Our number one scar is low self-esteem. Our number one scar is low self-esteem, and anyone who says it's not, they're lying. Because how you stand properly, how the Chinese stand properly, is based on their history. How the Polish stand proud is on their history and their Pope. How the Hispanics, how they talk about their history in Spain. Everybody, every country talks about the greatness of their history but us, because our history has been a mystery, so therefore we've been in a mystery. We've been mystified, so we don't know who we are. So we have to return to the source, like a Sankofa, return from what you came, from what you come from, and return from what you came. And that's based off also of a Kemetic principle, which is why you have Djibouti, which is the ibis, which does a purification and cleaning up of itself. And so knowledge is a purifying and cleaning regimen or medicine for the body and for the soul. So this is the one thing that we dismissed. It was used in the 20s to unify us with Marcus Garvey. It was used in the 50s to unify us with King, Malcolm X, Elijah Muhammad, Martin Delaney, Noble Drew Ali. Everyone used a new vision of self, that of history. But then after the 70s going into the 80s, and they saw the unification that took place, and they allowed the teaching of correct black or some black history to be taught in the schools and saw how the blacks were pulled together, they shut that down, and they made sure that the House Negroes who were pro-white were in the lead in removing our correct history from our education so that we would be better able to be manipulated and controlled. And therefore, as a result, as of today, we are the number three population in the United States. After 400 years of being number two, we have been displaced by those who are from Latin America and who speak the Spanish language. And that's how they have identified us. So how we must fix medicine, which is the last threshold of some source of income to be able to support a revolution, which you may not know, it was a dentist that supported Martin Luther King when all the black churches turned against him. It was a dentist who supported Martin Luther King when all the black leaders, the black Sikhs and the black churches wouldn't allow him to speak except a black pastor in Detroit. The last 2 years of King's life, they told him, you are Martin, not Malcolm, and white people don't want you to learn about the last 2 years of Martin Luther King. Therefore, you need to look at Travis Smiley's book so you learn about the last 2 years, the real king. So we have to learn the real thing so that we can now become the real thing when it comes to being the real queen and the real king, and so we can do our noble, historic, elegant, intelligent thing as we return back to our throne seat again and rule. Dr. Brown?
Thank you, Dr. Times, and thank you for the clarification. Really appreciate it. I remember when Dr. Times had studied extensively under some of the greats and was giving lectures. He was an undergraduate student and was giving lectures over at the medical school on some of the information that he presented right just a few seconds ago. One of the most learned individuals and gifted individuals that we have, that our people have. And I appreciate that, Dr. Tyre. Yeah. You know,
thank you.
You're welcome.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say I really appreciate this program. When we did our when Dr. Times, Dr. Donovan, and Dr. Moncrief organized the Juneteenth program, the information, the Flexner report, and the information that Dr. Moncrief was delivering, as well as all of the presenters, was just so timely. You know, it's just so timely. And our children, I agree with Dr. Times in terms of lack of self-respect and self-esteem is number one problem, and that has been the legacy of what they sought to instill in us. You know, there was a method to their madness of ripping the unborn child out of a mother, instilling that fear into the child, which would be passed down genetically from generation to generation as part of the Willie Lynch techniques, you know, separating us in all kinds of ways, the light skin from the dark skin, the southern blacks from the northern blacks, the different tribes, the different languages, just keep us separate from one another. And we at Wayne State have had a couple generations of no African-American physicians to continue on the legacy. And for any listener that has a child or knows of a young person that is interested in medicine, reach out to the Office of Diversity and Inclusion and Dr. Donovan Roy and his staff at Wayne State Medical School, or the post-bac program, Dr. Anita Moncrief or Dr. Times of the Benton Harbor Health Center. Reach out, and this is part of what our focus is right now in terms of inspiring the youth to be to become doctors, to become physicians. Females, males, we're looking to increase our numbers because we all acutely feel that, you know, we're the last ones. We're the last ones. There is a void behind us, and we're there to assist. That support is so important. The mentors that I didn't mention in the introduction that Dr. Mary Lee so eloquently read, Dr. Charles Vincent, Dr. Charles Whitten. Dr. Collins, who was I think he followed Dr. Vincent in the Office of Student Affairs. Dr. Dunbar has been a stalwart at Wayne State's Medical School. The MARC program stood for Minorities Access to Research Careers, and the MBRS program were Minority Biomedical Support. These were both funded by the National Institutes of Health. And most of those programs were discontinued. And Dr. Moncrief did reference the 1978 Allen Bakke decision that made things very difficult. And the last 7 years or 7-10 years over at the medical school, where the very definition of what constituted a disadvantaged person was twisted for the sake of for those that were not African American. And again, if anyone has anyone that they know of, or any program that they know of, please reach out to those that I mentioned earlier, and we'd love to mentor the next generation, because the previous generations mentored us. I remember when I was in Dr. Marazzi's lab, you know, she was an Italian-American woman that was ostracized in the Department of Pharmacology because she was female. And, you know, there were things that happened during that time. People would be thrown in jail. I remember one male physician, I was sitting there, and we were going over, Dr. Marazzi and myself and the team were going over the lab reports, the studies that we were doing, and he walked into there and said and called her all types of names and expletives, and then walked out. Nothing ever happened to him. And I remember, I don't remember the gentleman's name, but he worked in the Department of Physiology. He was not he was not a PhD, but he worked there. And he told me something that I always remembered. He said, he called me Jim. He said, Jim, they'll get you through your emotions. That's how they'll get you. And if you notice, if anyone's listening and you've been on the job where people are pressing you or pressuring you, and you may be overqualified, usually you are, because we have to be, it used to be 4 times better, but we have to be 40 times better now just to get in. They'll attack you through your emotions, and whether that emotion makes you angry, and whether it's a short-term problem, you may you know, not want to deal with this particular situation. They'll get rid of you that way, or they'll make it where your immune system is affected. Your blood pressure's up. You develop all kinds of things you never had before, whether it be hypertension, diabetes. That is part of an overall plan. And people, I remember when I was doing poetry, this young man, you know, one problem we've had, we being African people, we don't generally teach the lessons globally in terms of where others, they teach lessons, you know, that the Jewish people have their synagogues, and they teach lessons to the next generation. And the Arabs, and Islam, and they teach these lessons. You know, what lessons are we teaching our children? Usually, you know, like the daughters, the sons and daughters of the civil rights movement, many parents didn't teach them about what they went through when they were marching. They didn't. I don't know what the reason is, but it made that that next generation, rather than being stronger, weaker. And I remember a young gentleman back in the 90s when I was doing poetry, late 90s, and I had a character called Crazy Joe, and it was a 10-part series. I was studying from the boards. I studied all day over at Detroit Mercy. And then the last 2 hours or last hour, I would write a poem and then read the poem at open mic at a place called Cafe Mahogany. And later other poetry spots opened in Detroit, Coffee and Cream and others. Well, I remember a young man, he was in his mid-20s. The storyline follows some of the things that I've been through in my life growing up on the east side of Detroit. I remember the physics professor, and this is the honest to God truth. He called us, this is 1970, he called us, I don't think high school teachers are considered to be professors. So he was a physics teacher, not professor. But he started his day every day, niggas ain't, S-H-I-T, every single day. It was only two African-Americans in there, myself and Greta. And he started the next day, niggas ain't, S-H-I-T. He spent 30 minutes talking about, you know, black people. He talked about the riots and all this and that and the other. And then we get 30 minutes of physics, you know. And I remember, you know, it was just Greta and myself. And, you know, I just remember it kind of broke Greta, you know, because she had wanted to be a doctor at one time. And I saw her years later. And I was on a different path. I had joined the Shrines of the Black Madonna. And she saw me canvassing, and she started crying. She said, James, you need to be in school. You need to be in school. What are you doing? You know, that wasn't the path for me. I had to gain more knowledge of self, you know, and I spent 5 years doing that, and it was a different kind of thing. So when I finally went back to school, I could deal with the racism. You can't hardly describe it, you know.
It's raw. That's what it is. You would expect that in a professional place, it would be very subtle, but it's in your face. It's trying to attack you on your reading and your test taking, and then making slide comments that you can't retaliate against because you're a student who's trying to get out, and then if you say anything, you're afraid that they're going to put you out. So it's being in a prison-type situation, being a prisoner of a war camp, where you can't talk back to the people who are holding you hostage. So, you know, they were blunt on it. And you saw that blacks were broken, that most of the blacks that were in medical school were blacks, were white-skinned blacks. Most of the medical students in the medical school are black-skinned whites. Most of the students in the medical school are black-skinned whites. That's why they haven't really affected our community, because they want the white coat to cover their blackness, and they try their best to be white. A lot of kids fail because they're spending a lot of time trying to make friends with the white kids to be accepted, because they feel subconsciously inferior. So what Dr. Brown did was he had to deal with rid of his inferiority complex, and then he was able to deal with the complexities of medicine. And that's what we're not doing, like he said, that the teaching the correct tissue was shut down. We did that to ourselves. The grassroots population who gave us the Civil Rights Bill, the Affirmative Action Bill, went to the black middle class to try to do, they looked at the black middle class as hopefully more like the Thurgood Marshall who brought this into existence, that they would take it to the next level, but the black middle class tried to take us black to the plantation. And that's where we are today. That's why you have an FBI informant, Al Sharpton, being pushed to the black community. The FBI informant, Jesse Jackson, being pushed to the black community as heroes, and not really talk about the Dr. King last 2 years. The effect that Malcolm X was killed on a Sunday, which was Monday, when he was supposed to appear in the United Nations World Court to try the United Nations for genocide against the Negro people and the black people. And that's why everyone knew he was going to die, because he won his first case when he first presented. He won against the United States, and the United States was not going to let him have that again in 64, where he was going to win and shut down trade opportunities or the ability to take over these African countries. So it's very critical. I need you to take your time and listen to what Brother Brown was saying, and how he was trying not to be raw, but the pain and suffering that he went through, but the mental thing that he did was get his head right. And so I want you to think this clearly now. Now, we were asking that the 3/5 of a human be changed in the Constitution. We were asking that the Constitution of the United States, which says today, on July 7th of 2022, that every black person on this phone is still a property, is still 3/5 human and not a full human being. That right now, whether you like it or not, you are 3/5 of a human according to the United States, and that's why killing you is not killing a person but killing or destroying property. Killing you is not killing a person but destroying property. We were asking for that to be changed, and they gave us a Juneteenth celebration instead. I turn it back over to Mike.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. I want to remind our audience to please tap one on your phone to join the conversation or for any questions. Dr. Brown presented a reading list earlier. If you would like to get that reading list, please text 571-998-1964. That's 571-998-1964. Text Dr. James Brown reading list, please, and we will facilitate that for you. You know, this has been an awesome presentation, and you know, I had, as you were speaking, Dr. Brown, and then we're going to go on to Dr. Moncrief and Dr. Long. But as you were speaking, and I was thinking about, you know, how I grew up partially in Detroit, also on Detroit East Side, and attended Miller Junior High at the time. You know, that's what it was called back then, and Our Lady of Sorrows, which was a Catholic school, and Cass Tech. And so during the Miller Junior High School, you know, I had a very, very, very strong interest in math and science. And, you know, and I wanted to pursue all of math. I wanted to pursue all of science, because I was very interested in research. Well, at Miller, you know, I was told that girls didn't need that. You know, you're a girl, you don't need that. You know, my level of math was only intro to algebra. That's it. Now, I was told that I didn't need it. And but at the same time, well, back then, Miller and all these schools were majority white. And but I would walk, you know, past these classes at the Miller Junior High School and would see white girls sitting up in the classes. And so, you know, that was puzzling to me. Of course, I didn't understand in seventh grade now that, you know, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know this was, you know, racism, systemic racism. And, you know, I didn't know that in education, in the science and math. So they were literally, you know, within the system holding us back. You know, I think about that. I never, you know, and self-esteem, you talked about self-esteem. I'm a clear example of you know, what can happen to you and your self-esteem. You know, I didn't need math, you know, because we're not good at math. And, you know, that was another thing you said, that, you know, girls are not really good at math. You don't need math. It's not for you. So, you know, the power of suggestion, you know, to a child. And then what is happening, but while it's happening, when it's happening, but only until later in life, you know, studying and you know, educating ourselves and, you know, and talking with people as we're talking now, do we understand what really happened to us. And so at some point, you know, after being told that, oh, you don't need this, and you can't learn it all, you know, in so many words, you know, I got a mental block. And I never beyond intro to algebra would I pursue it or think of, you know, or even try it, because the self-esteem had been, my desire had been, you know, killed, annihilated, a young girl. And so, you know, I say this to say that the power of suggestion, and, you know, to our minds. And I'd like to, I'll ask the question later, but we'll move on to Dr. Moncrief.
Thank you, Dr. Lee. I'm just listening to our history. I am grateful to my Lord Jesus Christ for the opportunity to have been able to visit Egypt and to visit Ghana, and to experience some of our history firsthand. Another visit that I was able to make is to visit the sites of the historical Black medical schools and colleges here in the United States. At one time we had 19 Black medical schools and departments, and today we have Meharry, Morehouse, and Drew. And some of the Black medical schools were actually started by Blacks, some of the 19. The first ones that were started by whites and white religious groups, and we needed those. But out of the institution of colonial enslavement, we had medical schools started by Blacks who came out of that situation. And today we have only four left open. And learning from our history, I have to ask the question, why can't we open more Black medical schools and departments today? It is clear that our system is set up so that we cannot advance in it in terms of medical education. So if we can have Black come out of being enslaved, and their parents being freedom seekers opening medical schools, why can't we open them today? And the answer is, the only thing that's stopping us from doing that is us. We are old by this country, old, not needing to go beg for. We are old reparations. Everybody else gets reparations. The Jewish people get reparations. The Japanese people get reparations. Native Americans get reparations. We are owed more than any other group of people in this country, and we don't get a dime. Well, it's time for us to start saying, pay us what you owe us. And the way you can pay us back in medical education is to take the money, the sweat, the blood of our people that we've already paid and reinvest it back into us having Black medical schools and departments. Why can't we have at least four more open within the next decade? There is no reason. We have sites where Black medical schools used to stand, Dillard in New Orleans, Shaw in Raleigh, North Carolina, Lincoln in Oxford, Pennsylvania. We had the the Medical, Theological, and Theological College of Christ Institute in Baltimore. Those cities don't have black medical schools in it. Those cities don't have black hospitals in it. We could open those things on our own. A lot of times we sit around asking for people to come and help us. We can help ourselves on this. People want to help us, we let them help us. But we should be able to go ahead and open medical schools at those places where we once had medical schools at. The only thing that stops us is ourselves. If you look at some of the literature that we put out on the history of black medical schools and departments, Dr. Tynes, myself, and I think my niece might be even on the phone here tonight, Brittany, talk about the four Fs. The medical schools, black and white medical schools, fell for these reasons, but the black ones, it's just slapping us in our face. We fell for lack of financial planning, for the lack of facility, for the lack of faculty, and for that stupid Abraham Flexner report. Those were the four Fs. Today, those four Fs will defeat us again if we don't start looking at planning for the financial future of opening more black medical schools. Don't settle for this crazy talk of reparations for 10, 15, 20 years. That's just stupid. We were the victims of intentional enslavement for 400 years. Why shouldn't we have reparations based on a formula that would allow us to have these medical schools supported by this country that we already have paid the debt to for at least 150 years? Why shouldn't we have medical schools built in this country by money that we've already invested in building other medical schools in this country? If we approach this right, and if we truly understand that we were intentionally denied these opportunities so that we can intentionally act and receive these opportunities back, we will be able to finance our own medical schools to train our own doctors. And our own doctors can treat our own patients or any other patients that they want to treat. That is their right. But right now, the current system doesn't train us. And Dr. Tynes, you know, was speaking about the color of the doctors, you know, black doctors with white insides or whatever, okay? We need black doctors. We need black doctors because black doctors, we need people to treat black people. Flexner Report said that the only reason why we need black contained diseases, but white doctors will always be treating black and white patients. We need black doctors to treat black patients, and we need to train our black doctors to treat black patients. Get away from what's happening today. I already told you, Wayne State accepted 300 students, and only 12 are African American. How are you going to address problems like COVID, diabetes, hypertension with 12 doctors? We have to start educating our own. We have to learn from our history, our African history, our American history, and start educating our own. Demand, not go with your hand out and your head bowed, begging for money and resources. We already are owed those things. Thank you.
So very true. So very true. And we certainly can do it. And you all who know me, no, we'll be looking into this. Dr. Longs.
Dr. Longs. Yeah, Andrews, hi. Again, thanks, Dr. Mary Lee. Interesting topics, you know, that always centers around, you know, us struggling through this this system of racism and which, you know, from my perspective, trying to enlighten our people, you know, from a mental perspective, you know, it is a challenge when there's not enough black faces in various areas, whether it's in community mental health or private practice or even in a juvenile system or an adult system to enlighten our folks. It's a challenge. To just, you know, to realize how in depth, you know, this whole total the world of being colonized by, you know, whites is just, you know, we've gotten to this point. But, you know, I always say that there is hope. And, you know, some of the kids, as you know, as I see, are in some dire straits. And the real sad part is that when you talk to them, engage them, you realize where they could have been really aided with people who look like them to give them some insight, while also decreasing their anxiety about these same people who look like them abusing and neglecting them, which is something a lot of clinicians, we don't like to talk about. But I think we've all mentioned it in our different areas of practice in terms of, you know, black physicians truly wanting to serve black people. You know, a lot of us don't. We may say we do, but we don't. And if it's a part of the whole managed care assault on physicians, maybe that is a part of it, because that, you know, we're in some dire straits. Everybody on this call, particularly the doctors, can recall, you know, right around the city of Detroit, and there was a physician's office on every street. Now, I mean, you're lucky to find anybody in private practice. So, you know, where do our people go? The ERs turn them around. There's just not a lot of resources. But I agree with Dr. Moncrief. We need our own facilities. We need our own black hospitals. You kind of wonder what happened to the Dunbar House. And I remember my father-in-law at the time would give a history lesson on what that Dunbar House really represented. It was a hospital before that. You know, it was a meeting place for a physician that came later. But what happened to it? You know, what the desolation and the destruction of all these clinics as far as medicine is really no different to what's happened on a lot of the campuses around the country in terms of African-American studies. I remember at U of M as a freshman, the Trotter House was viable area where you can go and learn and read and interact with other black folks. Now that's been turned over. So I don't know. We have to support each other. And even though, you know, a lot of us have all these alphabets behind our name and all that, we don't support each other like we should. So I think from a historical perspective, Dr. Brown's presentation was excellent, and everybody's comments was excellent. But at the end of the day, what are we going to do about the task at hand? And, you know, I don't see anybody else coming besides us. And it's possible. So that's my commentary tonight. As you guys were talking, you know, I couldn't help but to kind of read back on some of the writings of an old psychiatrist. His name was Franz Fanon. I don't know if you guys ever been introduced to him, but he was, you know, from Africa. He talked a lot about colonialization, and I'm just reading some of his writings in terms of the total destruction of colonization and this whole, how he internalized this whole paranoia and phobia that whites have towards us. And it's what it is. But now, you know, it's our own phobia towards ourselves, which means we have a whole lot of work to do.
Thank you.
I can make three clarification points. So number one, everybody listen. So 1968 Civil Rights Bill definition is critical, is major, is something you need to write down or ask Dr. Lee to send it to you again. The Civil Rights Bill definition of a minority, because diversity and minority are two different things. Diversity and inclusion means you divide out the black and include everybody else. Diversity and inclusion means you divide out the black and include everybody else. The Civil Rights Bill, only there for people who had been enslaved by either Europe or the European American, who had their land taken by the European American or removed from their land and were considered non-citizens of the United States, or the individuals who had suffered lynchings, which is hangings. And I think we need to say hangings more so than lynchings, because lynchings are going on now of black men by bullets. So bullets is another form of lynching modern day. But so if you have not been a slave in the United States, you do not qualify for the 1968 Civil Rights Bill. If you have not had your land taken away from you by the European settlers, then you do not qualify for the definition of being a minority. If you have not been imposed with Jim Crow laws or slave codes or placed on a reservation, then you do not qualify for the definition of 1968 minority. So to be a minority, the number one group is the African in America, and they use African all the way post-slavery until modern day. And that's why your first Methodist church was called the African Methodist Episcopal Church. That's why your first Baptist church was called the African Baptist Church. So we were Africans after the Civil War. It's only later times that connection and definition was changed. So you have the one, been enslaved, come, and that means that you didn't come over by passport or came over by visa. Two, you either removed from your land or your land was taken from you. Therefore, that qualifies the native people, who are the second Homo sapien group, are the second group that populated America. The first group was the African group, or the African population called Fulsan. That's why you have Fulsan, Arizona, F-O-L-S-O-N. Those are your first group, and that's who the Inuit, who the Eskimos intermarried with to give you the modern-day Native American. So the African and the Indian, the African and the Eskimo came together to give you your modern-day Native American. But almost 80% of a lot of your Native Americans now are not Native Americans. They are whites who paid $5 to be included on the Dial Commission after Jackson, Colonel Jackson, who became President Andrew Jackson, removed the Native people from Florida and sent them all the way to Oklahoma. They created the Dial Commission that if you paid $5, which is almost like $200 in modern-day times, that they would put your name on that roster so you would later get benefits as a Native American. So the actual Native American is a combination of the African called Fulsan and the Eskimo. Then that land from them, they qualified because they were taken and they were also enslaved. But the problem is that they were enslaved and later enslaved their own brothers and sisters, blacks. So Native Americans were enslavers of Africans. Native Americans enslaved Africans. Native Americans enslaved black people. Native Americans were one of the slave traders during that period of time in America's history. Native Americans were also bounty hunters who went out and caught black slaves for white plantation owners. So we want to keep our history straight. The next group is called the Mixta. The Mixta is a group that's called mixed. The Mixta group is from the Olmec Empire, which would now would be called Native people and African. So the Mixta means the mix of the African and the Indian in the Olmec Empire, which we call Mexico today. So Mexico was not called Mexico, but Mexico represents the Mixta, which is that mixed group of the African and the Indian, just like when you have the 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 Maroon, which is also a group of Africans who got free mixed with Indians. Just like Seminole is another word for African and Indian. It wasn't an actual tribe, but it was those who were mixed. So the Mexican, the Native American, the African, that's who's 1968. That's the minority, period, the federal minority. It was expanded to include the Eskimo. It was expanded to make sure that the Native, the Eskimo is considered like a Native American. And then also the land was taken from the rich port, which is called, the rich port is called Puerto Rico. So Puerto Rico is the rich port where the land was taken and the people were somewhat enslaved, and that is a part of the United States. And so that group falls in to mainland Puerto Rican in 1968. There's no Arab, there's no Chinese, there's no Indian from India, there's none of that. So put together by white politicians from the South who put the Civil Rights Bill together, because there was no term until 1968 called minority, which means the less group. It's an insignificant group because we are the majority, it's the less. So when you call yourself a minority, you're saying that you're less than the rest of everybody else. So when you want to call your organization minority, you're saying you're less than all the other businesses. You're a minority business group, and I'm less than everybody else who's in business. But we've been conditioned to accept that mentality to call us less than, just like we've been through music, except to be called NIG. So if you have that definition of minority, and again, white people put that together. White people put the Civil Rights Bill together, not Martin Luther King, not the Black Six, period. And the catch to it, just like how they created the Dial Commission and allowed whites to be added onto the Native American class, and five Indian groups made a pact with the white America to be treated better. And the white people said, because you're making this deal to make sure that you hunt down blacks for us, hunt down slaves for us, hunt down Africans for us, and make sure that the Africans be kept in check, we will call you civilized. So the five civilized tribes were your slave traders. So your five civilized tribes were your slave traders, and your big trader was called Cherokee. And everybody wanted to talk about how much Cherokee they have. So you had to say how much slave trade you had in your family line. So next, the other catch to it was that just like how they took away with the Dial Commission, they added white women to the Civil Rights Bill in 1968. White women who are a numerical majority, white women who are a numerical majority, that they were now considered as minorities. And when you look at the labor statistics and EEO, you will find that 85% of minority business, 85% of minority businesses in the United States is owned by white women. 85% of businesses that are considered minority are owned by white European American women.
And that's typically, I just want to interject in here, and that's typically achieved by, you know, with their husband being 49% owner and the wife being 51% owner of the business. So this is how they've taken away from us what's ours. And I want to admonish, you know, our Africans here to, you know, we don't want to, of course, neighborhood commerce, we do business development. We always run into African men here in the United States, black men, who do not want their wives or their daughters or sisters to be 51% ownership. I mean, this is a strategy, you know, for qualifying for funding and grants that are out there and available. And you all know this So, I mean, this is a game. I mean, it's all a game. The system is the game, and we must, you know, operate and know how to master the game, okay? So, I mean, this is what they do. When they came up with these laws and altered these laws, and, you know, that's why my son did not get into Notre Dame. I mean, well, he was admitted as a student, but he did not get into this program. Ultimately, he graduated. He graduated from Wayne State, University Law School. So Wayne State definitely has been there, you know, for us. It wasn't through any special. It wasn't through this type of program. They, at the time, didn't have it. I don't recall if they did. I don't think they did for lawyers. But so it's very important, you know, if you talk to me, I mean, about your business, please understand that when I ask you as a black man, let your wife be 51% owner, it's for a reason. Okay, Dr. Tyne.
Very, very important. Now, the last point that Dr. Marquis made, that you and I painted, that it just flew by you. Now, I need you to take the number 12 and put it over 300, and then you divide that 300 into 12. And the percent of black people, black young boys, black young girls, to address the issue of the shortage of black doctors in black neighborhoods and black communities, what Wayne State is doing, is 0.04. So you're going to come up, 12 divided by 300 is going to give you 0.04. How is that a commitment to change? How is that a commitment to addressing systemic racism? Again, I reminded you, we were asking for the Constitution to be changed to make us full human beings. But the suckers, in terms of the black congressional party, your black politicians, accepted a Juneteenth celebration without even teaching the cultural revelation. They accepted a Juneteenth celebration without recognizing the cultural relationship, that's a time to teach African culture, black culture, people who didn't even have an African drum at a Juneteenth program. So we asked for something significant of substance, and your black politician, House Negroes, went for something superficial. And we've been doing superficial ever since the death of Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and Cleaver. And the thing is that the Shrine of the Black Madonna was the people who were on point with the black Christian nationals to move us forward in those groups. So asking for stuff of substance, not superficial, because we said remove the part that we're three-fifths human, make us full human beings. Therefore, if we're shot, it is not damage of property. Therefore, if we're killed, is not going under the 1710 Casual Killing Act, where white women were killing so many black slaves that they had to pass a law to protect the white women from going to jail for destroying and damaging property. The Casual Killing Act, 1710, Casual Killing Act, white women were killing black men, black women, at an astronomical rate during slavery. As you know, white women, there's a book now showing how many white women were slave owners. And so we were asking for us to be full human beings, so if they kill us, they'll kill the human being, and therefore anybody with a passport is considered a human being, anybody with a visa considered a human being, and will be tried on the full extent of murder if they are killed or even, you know, shot by a cop. But we are three-fifths human, and therefore we are destruction of property of the United States and have to be tried in a civil rights court, not in a murder court, if someone kills us, because we're nothing but property in July 6th of 2022. So So look at the numbers and see these people are not serious, and how diversity and inclusion has decreased the number of blacks, increased the number of Persians that we call Arabs, because originally Arab was called Saudi Arabia, which was African, and the Persians moved in, just like the United States moved the Persians in to North Africa, which is Egypt, which is really Kemet. So those are Persian invaders. They are not native to the place. We have to look and see how we are being displaced, and that we're now, Dr. Claude Anderson warned us that we were going to move to the number three spot. That's why your TV shows, your commercials, your movies are going to be emphasizing Hispanics and Asians. They're going to be emphasizing Hispanics and Asians, no more looking out for the blacks, because our black leadership has failed us and sold us out and tried to take us back to the plantation. And they have no ovaries, they have no testicles to be able to stand up and demand like Dr. Moncrief is. Dr. Moncrief is from that spirit that from the Queen Mother Moore, from the Queen Ashanti, the Queen Ya, from the Queen Hatshepsut, the warrior African woman who was able to keep Kemet or Egypt intact. And nowadays our women have been tricked into being the HOs and et cetera and et cetera and et cetera. But it's the black woman who is the key to our salvation, because it's the black woman who maintained Egypt. When the men were killed during battle, they had children and taught the children who the enemy was. Our black women today don't even teach the children who the enemy was, and most black people I see don't even know how to recognize when they have been experiencing systemic slavery, because they can't deal with it. So that's Dr. Long, especially, where they're going in a state of denial. So 0.04. And we want to do what Dr. Claude Anderson wants. We want some stuff of substance. We don't want something of superficial. We want substance, not superficial. We want substance, not superficial. We want substance, not superficial. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Brown, you presented a phenomenal historical account of medicine. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, the importance of this as and the, you know, for our self-esteem. What is the importance of the history relative to medicine and the treatment of black patients today? You know, what is, okay, go ahead.
Yes, well, thank you. The relevance of medicine and the treatment of black patients, there will be no more Tuskegee experiments. There will be no more percentages of African Americans making up 43% or so of COVID deaths in 2020 and 2021. Our numbers were so out so much higher than our percentage of the population, and the underbelly, the racism of the medical system was just laid bare in terms of how the distribution of scarce resources was tilted out of our favor. You have two patients, one African American, one white, both 65 years old, being transferred from the nursing home, the same nursing home, in the same room, same floor. One, the white patient was admitted and if needed, placed on a ventilator. The African American patient is told to go home and monitor his symptoms. And, you know, the morgues were full of African American patients, and we just experienced firsthand what it means not to have representation in the medical field. So the importance of medicine in terms of having African American physicians is more critical now than it's ever been, because if we don't help ourselves, if we don't advocate for our people, then we've been shown very clearly that no one else will.
You're absolutely right, and I wanted our listeners to hear this, you know, coming from the profession. You know, I talk it and say it all the time. I'm not a medical doctor. But, you know, we need you to know that we are not treated fairly at all in the medical profession, and we have not for so many, 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 many years. I've been under the care of a black doctor for my own treatments over 30-some years. And, you know, I feel safe. I need you to know that. Very, very, very safe in the hands of my black physicians. If I have to go to the emergency room, you know, I have in my, keep in my wallet, you know, emergency instructions and who to call and who to speak for me and who to, if I can't speak for myself and what doctors I want there, and my children clearly know it. I will not place my life, my medical, my physical health, nor my mental health in the hands of an all white or white, you know, period, or any other nationality. And I haven't for so many years, you know, I thank God for help. So, you know, it's very important to me personally that you all, you know, understand what we're doing here and, you know, why we're here and why we have these talks. You know, I lost a brother to COVID due to lack of treatment that was available that was denied to him by whites and Indian doctors. We lost a brother-in-law. My sister lost a brother-in-law, you know, because he was told to go home and monitor his own symptoms from the emergency room. And these things truly, really do happen. You know, my sister lost a sister-in-law. And so we lost a number of people in our family. And COVID, not to COVID, but to systemic racism in the medical profession, you know, but, you know, within the hospitals. And, you know, I have a cousin. Had she not been an RN herself, would have lost her life. She sick with COVID, you know, to the point of death in the hospital where she literally provided services, where she worked, her employer now. She's in the emergency room and admitted, and they still weren't treating her. She literally had to go to the upstairs, calling and advocating for herself through staff who knew her, or else she would have lost her life. And you know, we had her. We had her on the show, I believe, during COVID. And so during, like, I think that was 2019 I think it was 2020 that we had her on. I believe we had her on. And so, you know, this lack of treatment, you know, what's going on in the hospitals, you know, medical records being altered, foolishness going on in operation, you know, in surgery, you know, being over-medicated. I mean, these things are real, and our people are dying at the hands of, you know, racist medicine. And so I want to, you know, just let you all know I appreciate you. We're going to, well, we're wrapping it up now, really. We're ready. And I want you to know, Dr. Brown, that certainly do appreciate you. We're going to turn to Jared, if you have any questions or comments as we wrap it up.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Dr. Lee, and thank you always for this opportunity. It's such a humbling thing, you know, to just sit and listen to all the wisdom that is on this phone call, like, all the time on this radio show. God bless you all for the work that you do. Dr. Brown, thank you so much for enlightening me with this. Again, I attended the symposium that you guys did, and I found that greatly enlightening. Thank you so much. Dr. Tynes, thank you for the perspective. Really appreciate it. Really, the only thing that I really want to say is everything tonight spoke to me about connection, right? We're not connected to those very vital pieces of information about our history, about our contemporary lives and things like that, that define us and give us purpose. And that those people who want to do us harm stick with. They are committed, like, wholeheartedly to this, and they pay it no mind. Because, like Dr. Tynes has been saying repeatedly, we're not considered full humans. We're considered property. We're considered dismissible, disposable, right? Like a bench or something that you get from IKEA. I'm not an IKEA person. I am a person, right? And until the value that we contribute is appreciated by ourselves and reinforced by ourselves, by, like, this massive level of intellect that has just, it struck a pause, I'm sure, across the entire community of people who are listening to this. You know, this is that good glue. This is that sort of good glue that brings us back to a reality of understanding that despite what you've done toiling for the white man in his field, you've not done enough work toiling for yourself and your own. You should. We all should. We should all keep that perspective and not have any of our successes feel like losses. We should have those successes feel like something that goes towards that philosophy that we all need to follow. Dr. Moncrief, you're right, needs to be repaid. No one else in this world continues to lend out things like that, and we've been lending out blood and bone. We're owed. You're right. We are owed. And until people actually see the value of what we're owed and be able to put that into context and not keep settling for fool's gold, we'll always continue to see these same sorts of things. And Dr. Longs, I didn't forget you. Thank you so much for, you know, just putting it out there and keeping it real, keeping it straightforward about exactly what's happening. And you were the first somebody to kind of blow this whistle of saying, hey, we're kind of disappearing, especially people in psychiatry. You know, black people don't go and see psychiatrists because the system deems us to be crazy. We would love the mental health, but the system deems you crazy for seeking. That's all. Thank you guys so very much. God bless you all. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you. Dr. Moncrief.
Thank you again for allowing us this forum to express and share some of our history. I do tend to get a little emotional about it because I just get sick and tired of the same old things over and over again, and it's time for us to move forward as a people. I think we need to not only move forward as a people, but stop trying to hurt and destroy each other, figure out ways that we can work together regardless. You know, I'm going to say this. We are and should be proud of who we are. And we don't need to put down anybody else in order to make us look good or in order for us to shine. Our brilliance should shine on its own.
Yeah.
We don't have to look at other groups of people and look for faults in them. That's what the white man wants us to do, fight ourselves and then fight other people who are being oppressed in this country. We can focus on moving forward as a people and bringing other people along that want to come along. But we can focus on ourselves and not worry about other people in terms of putting them down. That's not us.
Right.
We just need to focus on us moving forward. Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you. You're so right. Thank you. Thank you. Dr. Long.
Again, great show, Dr. Lee. I want to thank all the contributors, the usual group of physicians, and a special thanks to Dr. James Brown for your delivery, your wisdom, and your commitment to our people. Look forward to the next show. And Dr. Lee, your influence, believe me, it's spreading. You know, people are asking me about the show. And it's amazing to me that they even have heard about it. They tell them what time we come on at night. But it's really spreading in different arenas, and keep doing your great work. Thank you.
And thank you. Thank you so very much, Dr. Kine.
Yeah, so Dr. Claude Anderson teaches us that don't be mad at anybody. Don't be trying to fight anybody. Work on just loving us, doing for us.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, we done made everybody on this planet rich except ourselves. Now it's time for us to make ourselves rich. And I stand with Dr. Anderson, is that the first person you have to take care of is going to be us, which is, he's talking about us black people, not helping nobody else until we help ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about what your sex is. It's not about what your ethnicity is. It's not by what your geography is. It's the fact that you got black skin, that you only deal with the black skin that are kin to you, and the same goals and mentality. He says, Doctor, no more trying to convince the house Negro that it's time to go to get off the plantation. That is futile, that is wasted. And every single house Negro that was trying to be brought along always betrayed every single black revolutionary. Even the white one, John Brown, was done by blacks when black people tried to force, and it's wrong to force a house Negro to try to be a field Negro. You're supposed to accept their stance. It's wrong to try to have Kenita Brown or Clarence Thomas to now to try to be Angela Davis and Huey Newton. That's wrong. Let them be who they are, and that we continue to focus with those who are us, who have unity but not uniformity, that we move in a positive direction for freedom, not for us, but for our children. Everything that we should be doing is to be doing for the children that come behind us. So we have to work on us and us and us alone. We cannot.
Yeah.
We tried this from the 50s. We tried it in the 40s. We tried it in the 70s and 80s and 90s and 2000s, and it's failed. And trying to include everybody else has failed, period. That's why we have the George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, and that's why we don't even have we're not even allowed to be arrested and imprisoned and still not called a slave. We're still considered a slave if we go to prison. You're still a slave legally by the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to have the right to vote in the 14th, 15th Amendment. We shouldn't be having to do none of that. So we cannot help anybody else. We're not saying hate anybody else. We're not saying fight anybody else. But we're just saying that we have to just focus on us. It's a marriage. It's a relationship. How are you going to, as a husband, how are you as a wife going to get your marriage together if you keep worrying about your girlfriend and your boyfriend? So black people, we have to start finding out who I can and not let everybody else in and sit down and get this right.
Mm-hmm.
As Christians, I think if we get it right in America, then we can help the African brother get it right in Africa. Thank you, Dr. Lee.
Thank you so very much, and certainly appreciate you, Dr. James Brown, and your presentation. I just feel like there just wasn't enough time, and because I can feel and know that there's just so much that there's just so much that you can do, and present and deliver, you know, in this short period of time. But I do thank you and appreciate you and all of our listening, our listeners and our co-hosts and, you know, everyone all the time who are here you know, supporting us. Without you, there is no Dr. Merrily Live Show, as I always say. So, Dr. Brown, the floor is yours to, you know, your final thoughts and to wrap it up. And I have only one question, and that is, how many times have you been mistaken for James Brown, the Godfather of Soul?
I'm telling you, you know, it was so many times in terms of growing up. I used to think I was important. Because James Brown was important. Only when I got to be about 18, I said, well, I haven't accomplished anything. And I said, I've got to decide to make my own contributions. But I agree with Dr. First of all, I appreciate all the commitment, the wealth of knowledge and experience of all of your panel, Dr. Curtis Longs, Dr. Anita Moncrief, and Dr. Donald Times. I appreciate you, Dr. Mary Lee. What really struck a chord with me was when Dr. Moncrief was asking the rhetorical question, why can't we have our own hospital? And I remember when I think the last one was Southwest General, right down south of downtown. I remember there was so much hope and promise for that facility when it first opened. And I think that was the last one. I think that was the last remaining hospitals, Burton Mercy and the rest of the African-American hospitals were sort of incorporated into Southwest General. I remember maybe about 12 years ago, I was speaking with a colleague, and she was a great organizer. You know, I was saying, you know, with your organizational skills, why don't you handle the business of reopening this hospital? And I remember having the same conversation with Dr. Lawrence Reynolds, who's he works in Flint, and he works in circles of leadership in Flint. And he said, well, that wasn't his expertise. His expertise were federally qualified health centers. There are enough black MBAs now. You have to have a strong MBA core. You have to know what your strengths are. If your strengths are medicine, that's what you should be doing. If your strengths are organizational, and you know you've been to business schools, or you've been in, you know, Kaiser Permanente or wherever you've been, bring that talent back home. But understand that you don't have to control the doctors. All organizations that I see nowadays, when they first of all deprofessionalize doctors, they made it so private practices could not exist, and private African-American practices were the lifeblood of our community. Dr. Longs was saying there was a doctor's office on every corner, or a dentist's office on every corner. And so the thing is, the few African-American physicians that are being graduated, they have no experience of ownership. Now, I was in private practice for 16 years when I graduated from medical school, but it became such chore. I really applaud Dr. Times. He's still in private practice all these years. I never heard him say he worked for anybody other than himself. I applaud that and admire that. Dr. Longs, he's in private practice, and he's also, I believe, has employed, but he's always had his private practice. And I just feel that there are enough African-American MBAs, enough African-American accountants, enough African-American executive leadership, enough African-American doctors to pool these resources and create a different model. You know, the this model says that you don't have to go the way of corporate America, which deprofessionalizes the doctors and have LPNs running the show. Not to say there's anything wrong with LPNs, but the whole strategy is to say, oh, you don't worry about the business of medicine. We'll take care of that. And you're basically a high-paid slave is what it is. And that's the way all these things are structured. Even the organization so-called run by physicians, it's the same thing. You know, it has to be a different model. There, you know, black genius is in no short supply. It's black genius is everywhere. You know, you can't even help it. You know, Aretha couldn't help that she sang like that. Michael could jump higher than anybody else. He couldn't help it. Kobe couldn't help it. Whitney myself can't help playing that trumpet like he plays it. Leontine Price, Dr. Mae Jemison can't help it. You know, this is in us. This genius is in us. We can't help it. And so the thing is, we need to help ourselves. Since we can't help being geniuses, let's help ourselves. Let's build. We may start with maybe we may start with clinics in terms of some form of clinics. Maybe urgent cares, or we may just jump right in and do the hospital thing. You know, we may just do that because time is short. In fact, that's probably the way to do it. You know, just go ahead and open these hospitals at these facilities that are still owned by African-American organizations, but they do not have the infrastructure, you know. But we can do it, or all we have to do is decide to do it. I want to thank you, Dr. Mary Lee, for this forum that's going all over the world. You don't know who's listening, you know. You don't know who's listening, at least I don't know. And the thing is you have a wonderful team here. All the things that you all said is hit home. It's given me strength. Hopefully we have provided information and provided sustenance for the listening audience. God bless everyone on this panel. God bless Jared. Jared, God bless you, Dr. Mary Lee. God bless everybody. And God bless the black man and woman. Thank you.
Yeah, I have to give a warning. What you need to know is that they want to have nurses be unsupervised in the operating room. They want nurses to be unsupervised in the operating room. They want nurses to be unsupervised given anesthesia in the nursing room. So listen to that. That's what's going out in terms of they're trying to get a bill. They're trying to get an exemption by the federal government to allow nurses to be unsupervised in the operating room given anesthesia.
Wow. Thank you. Was someone else, Dr. Brown, were you about to say something?
I said,
Yes. Thank you all so very much. Thank you, our listeners, and we love you. God bless you. And we will do this. We will do this. This is the purpose of this this platform, as well, you know, along with the Neighborhood Commerce Institute. So if you don't know who the Neighborhood Commerce Institute is, just Google Neighborhood Commerce Institute, and our website will pop up, and then you can learn more about Dr. Mary Lee and our mission. God bless you all. Until next week, be safe, be blessed. And we will talk again next week. God bless you all. Good night.
Thanks.